All right, we're back. Channel 9 Live, in Mix 11. It's JavaScript Hour. We're going to start off with a really nice panel. We have Doug Crockford, James Mickens, Luke Coban. Luke, quickly tell people where you're from. Give us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I work at Microsoft in the JavaScript team that builds the JavaScript runtime for IE, so the engine called Chakra, and also work on the JavaScript language, and including being on the ECMAScript body.
Hi, so I'm James. I work at Microsoft Research in Redmond, and I'm in the distributed systems team, and I've done a lot of work too in JavaScript, trying to use it for ways to make pages run faster, more robustly than commodity web browsers.
Excellent.
And I'm Doug Crockford from Yahoo, and I discovered that JavaScript has good parts.
Well, that's an excellent segue. So what are some of these good parts, Douglas?
The best part, I think, is lambdas. So
lambdas.
JavaScript has functions that are first-class objects that are statically scoped, which is an amazingly powerful way of composing software.
Mm. Okay. So what do you think about that, Luke?
Agree 100%.
You agree 100%.
I think functions are an incredibly expressive tool, and JavaScript only has a few core building blocks. It doesn't have the sort of wild set of things that a lot of programming languages build up, but using just first-class functions and then some of the prototype mechanisms that are available in JavaScript, you can build some really interesting and powerful expressive models.
Sure. And James, you'd agree with that? I mean, you do a lot of research with JavaScript.
I would definitely agree. I think that the lambda syntax is very helpful, in particular when you're trying to do rapid prototyping and stuff. Right? And so that's obviously one thing that JavaScript is very good at, which is allowing you to come up with an idea, sort of code it out very quickly, and just sort of hit the ground running. So I think the lambda functions are very useful for things like that.
Excellent. Now I just want to remind people to please send questions to #CH9Live. We've evolved. We've gone from at to pound. And ask questions, because if you have a JavaScript question, there's answers here. Let's talk a little bit about the bad parts, just really quickly, because that's always kind of fun. Mm-hmm. We're in Vegas. So give me some of the bad things.
The bad parts, a lot of the bad parts were inherited from Java. JavaScript has Java syntax, and Java carries along most of the design errors that were in C, and they moved into JavaScript and seemed to be even more problematic there. There are also problems in JavaScript of operators that don't work correctly, like type of null isn't null, things like that. Plus, doing both addition and concatenation. So there are a lot of hazards to programming. But most of those could be detected statically, and so I've found that if you're aware of these things, they tend not to get in the way.
Okay, interesting. James?
So I think there's a couple things, just off the top of my head, that strike me as a little bit strange about the language design. Some of this is perhaps a bit controversial, but as you described, we're in Vegas.
Yes.
So, Mandalay Bay, this is where the fights take place.
Right on.
So one thing that I think could actually be stricken from the language is the eval statement. And I think that, a lot of people like to use eval, but there's been some very interesting empirical research that's come out that said, well, hold on, we hear all this folklore about, eval is frequently misused. What are people actually doing with the eval statement? Mm. And what that research has shown is that in many cases, people are using it in a way that indicates they don't really understand the language. They're using eval to simply assign to variables. They're using eval to do very simple mathematical operations or sort of access properties.
Yes.
And in getting rid of eval, I think that we would force some of these programmers to actually try to understand the language they're using a little bit better. And we'd actually enable some types of static analyses that are now very difficult on JavaScript code, because eval essentially opens the door to any number of dynamic time chicaneries. So that's one thing I would say. And also, I'm actually not a big fan of the prototype-based class system. Many people are.
Yes.
But I think that's one thing that I wish JavaScript had taken from Java, the notion of sort of standard C++ style classes. But I think the eval thing is actually the biggest thing for me.
That's going to be fun to dig into. How about you, Luke? What about some bad things?
Well, I won't list more, but I think one of the sort of overarching things is, Doug mentioned that a lot of these things, both you can, once you've learned about some of these things, you can actually work around them or avoid them. And so there's not many bad parts, I think, that really require the language to be bad once you know how to use it. So really, the language is very expressive. I think some of the tools, like Doug's JS Lint, there's great tools out there that help you to understand when you're violating some of these bad parts.
Sure.
But then also strict mode in ES5 is something that this morning we put out the first platform preview of IE10 that has strict mode support now, which Doug, made Doug very happy.
Yes.
But that's really good because it also helps to enforce some of these few of these pieces that are considered bad parts that got constrained a bit with strict mode.
Mm-hmm.
We now have some actual built-in mechanisms to catch those things and report errors.
Excellent.
Yeah, we have some difficulty, and there's no doubt as to what the bad parts are and how bad they are. But JavaScript has a peculiar relationship to the web, unlike any other language, and so. While we would like to get rid of the eval, at the same time, we recognize that doing so is going to break a lot of sites, and we don't want to be the cause of that breakage. And that's why things like strict mode are important, because of their opt-in characteristics. They give us permission to break the web in a selective way in order to improve it.
Well, I think that one thing you'll see is that, I think right now in terms of language design, JavaScript is kind of like where C was a couple years ago, in the sense people were saying, we're stuck with C, is there anything we can do with C to put in stronger typing or make it easier to do certain types of linguistic analyses to make things more secure? But I think that eventually some people said, well, look, maybe C is not the answer for certain types of things. And so then you start seeing new languages, Java, C#, stuff like that. And so that's one of the things that I'm obviously interested in as a researcher. What is sort of JavaScript++? What do we sort of do next?
Yes.
Yeah, in my view, it's JavaScript minus minus. What can we remove from JavaScript in order to make it a better language?
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit about prototypes, because I know that you are a big fan. You clearly seem to be not. You're more of the classical object orientation. Luke, I don't know what side of the fence he's on. We're going to find out. But can we talk about this a little bit? I mean, why are prototypes good in your mind? Why is that the right approach?
Okay, so prototypes came out of Self, which was an experiment at Xerox PARC and later Sun Labs to come up with a high-performance small talk using the principles of RISC architecture in order to improve the language. So they removed classes from small talk in order to make it easier to accelerate the language, and discovered that having done that, they actually improved the language. That working with the prototypal system is significantly less work and produces much better results than the classical model. And so some people think that the prototypes that are in JavaScript are this half-assed thing that isn't quite classes, but it's actually a more highly evolved, superior mechanism. But the industry mostly hasn't caught up to that yet. And so JavaScript is surprisingly a leading-edge language in that respect.
Very interesting. James, you don't agree with that, so why not?
So I think that prototypes, like many aspects of the JavaScript language, can be used well in the hands of a master. But I think that one of the things about JavaScript is that, much like Perl, if you're not necessarily a master hacker, then it's very easy for you to write code that's unmaintainable. I think that there's a couple reasons why I'm sort of not a big fan of prototypes. First of all, is that it enables a lot of sort of weird chicanery at runtime in terms of redefining classes prototype chains dynamically. This can have security implications. What exactly does it mean, for example, to change a DOM node's prototype? Mm-hmm. I mean, different browsers handle this differently. This may involve you sort of fiddling around with state that's sort of hidden and opaque in the browser that's written in C++. So I'm kind of I don't like the sort of, let's say, security drawbacks that you might get from prototypes, even though you might get some ease of use in, let's say, writing sort of non-adversarial apps. Second of all, I think that it makes efficient compilers more difficult to write. It's not to say that it's impossible. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the recent work using object shapes and stuff like that, some of that which was influenced by the Self stuff, you'll see that people are getting very, very good at sort of defining shadow classes behind these prototype defined classes and make things go quicker. But I do worry, what cost the complexity. When you're having to do all this sort of chicanery in the background to make things efficient, You know, I always fear that you're opening up, you know, potential usability or security holes. So I think those are the two main things for me.
Interesting.
Well, I agree with your concerns about security. And so JavaScript formally, or ECMAScript, does not allow for a modification of the prototype relationship. Some of the browsers have allowed that, and we're trying to stamp that out. And I also don't like the way that JavaScript represents prototypes, where the prototype is a public member of a public function. So we've got object.create now, which makes it possible to hide the prototype. So that kind of leakage and chicanery is no longer possible.
What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I sort of agree with both. I think you know, prototypes are a really powerful fundamental tool, and they can be very expressive. So they can allow you to express many different kinds of sort of class-based systems or mixin-based systems or various other sort of ways of doing inheritance and hierarchies of your objects. And and so they are a very powerful feature. I'm not sure that they are necessarily I'm not sure where exactly I'd land on whether they're the ideal feature for end users to be using to build large systems. I think because of their flexibility, they often don't put enough of the, you know, sort of guide rails on your development. And so I do think, you know, there's been some folks looking into patterns for how to sort of formalize some of the sort of standard class-based models on top of prototypes. And I think adding something which kind of helps to put some of those guide rails in place may be of benefit to JavaScript to kind of get both benefits.
Sure. I mean, that kind of brings up an interesting point, because from the history of the language, it was designed for non-programmers. And when we start throwing in, you know, sort of this sort of official object orientation, we might add a little more complexity. Now you're saying it would be easier for compilers and tooling in some sense.
Well, not just for compilers per se. I mean, I think empirically, if you look at the state of JavaScript compilers, you know, JITs, things like that, they're very good, right? They're very good. So it's not like these compiling challenges are insurmountable.
Okay.
But I think it's mainly from the perspective of security, at least my own concern.
Security.
So, you know, what does it mean that you can, you know, allow these prototype changes to be redefined dynamically? And like you were saying, you shouldn't actually be able to do some of that stuff. But once again, I think there's a tension between, you know, what should you be able to do versus historically, what have you been able to do, mm-hmm. and what will break when you start taking some of that stuff away.
Fair enough.
Well, I think one interesting thing, we talked about, like, making it easier for compilers and tools, and I agree, we don't need to make it all that much easier for compilers. I think compilers have gotten a lot faster over the last 10 years for JavaScript, and so we're already gaining a lot of those benefits. But the other class is obviously making it easier for users, right?
Like, sure.
You know, if users are building things, and one of the shifts that we're seeing is, you know, JavaScript, you know, as you mentioned, used to be used mostly by folks who weren't professional programmers. Mm-hmm. Now there's an increasing use of it for very large scale, effectively applications, in the 100,000 line to a million line scales. And at that scale, you do need some tools to help you to those guide rails, right? To help
sure.
you to design in a way. And good development teams find good patterns. They read Doug's book, and they, you know, they find ways to make sure that they stay within those tracks. But you know, I think we're going to see some evolution of the language need to track with that evolution of how the language is being used as well.
Absolutely. Now, ask questions out there. I know there's people watching this. We do have a question. This is a library question. I don't know whether or not any of you are going to be able to answer it. We're going to ask it. What's happening with jQuery client-side templating plugins, jQuery Temple and jQuery Data Link? Do any of you know the answer to this?
I didn't know that people were still using jQuery.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What?
All the smart kids are using YUI now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Hey, we use jQuery on Channel 9.
Huh.
You know that?
No, yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, you're kidding. You're playing. So please keep asking questions. Hey, Hafter or Haft4, what about the lack of native support for binary data in JavaScript?
That's an excellent question, actually. Something that we've been discussing in the TC39 group. There has been actually some work in the web standard side on this with a thing called typed arrays. And so there's been the introduction into a number of the browsers of a typed arrays construct for use in WebGL and starting to be used in specs for file API and things like that. And so I think there's some interesting work being done on binary data. Binary data is one of the sort of holes in the programmability story that JavaScript has. It really doesn't have the tools to deal in a native way with binary data. And so I think we would like to take what's being done in the typed arrays kind of work and find a way to make that sort of a more native part of JavaScript. I would.
Yeah, I think that's an increasingly important thing to look at as JavaScript is increasingly becoming a systems language, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, any systems language needs a way to deal with this binary data besides, you know, basics to foreign coding it, which is, you know, extremely painful. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the HTML5 recent efforts, you know, towards allowing some types of device access, things like the file access, things like that will become increasingly more important. And particularly, too, as JavaScript becomes a compile target, right? So people, you know, might write in C# or whatever, compile it down to JavaScript. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want an efficient way for that type of code to run sort of in a fast way.
Excellent.
It's sort of amazing how much JavaScript's mission has shifted since it started. It's gone from a beginner's language for validating forms mm-hmm. to a systems language and a compilation target. That's huge growth.
There's actually not many languages that have seen that level of change over that short of, I mean, it's really only a, you know, was it 15-year time period?
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, shifted through many different kinds of application development, and it's still being used for every one of those points in between at large scale.
I think that's more evidence of the goodness of the good parts, that the language is being pushed in all these directions mm-hmm. because it can take it.
Absolutely. I mean, could it be that one of the reasons behind this is the fact that it is a hybrid? We talk about hybrid languages a lot, right? Like adding lambdas to C#, making C#, adding dynamic to C#. In some sense, maybe C# will even become declarative at some point. Who knows what Andrew's thinking? The point is, what he is thinking for sure has been stated as, you know, the future is hybrid. But the future is actually now, because JavaScript is hybrid. It's functional, dynamic, imperative. I mean, object-oriented with prototypes. So maybe that's why it's so successful, because it just does everything. It's capable of doing much more than it was designed to do, which I just think is amazing since it was designed in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think Brendan Eich did an amazingly brilliant thing in combining and selecting the small set of features that he used to construct that language. The combinatorial power of those very small set of features is amazing.
Yeah. It's so, you know.
And just one thing briefly that I'd say is that, you know, another reason why JavaScript has become so popular is just because of, you know, I don't want to say accidental pervasiveness, but, you know, once it became sort of the lingua franca of the web, you sort of had to deal with it, you know. And so I think it's actually, you know, I'm a little bit perhaps more cynical, I guess. I mean, like, I think that JavaScript does have a lot of very nice features, but I think that, once again, just like C, you know, C got to the point where it was the systems language, mm-hmm. and so, you know, there really was no point in saying, well, I don't want to code in C, I want to, you know, code my OS in Lisp. It just wasn't going to happen, you know, and so I think that's sort of a drawback, but also a good feature of JavaScript, that it's so pervasive that now, you know, any changes you make to the language can have this very wide-reaching effect. But I do think it's important to keep in mind that one reason why it's so popular is not necessarily because it has, you know, a set of features that are desirable, but because it just sort of blossomed overnight and became this huge thing, and now we basically have to deal with it.
Well, but I think it blossomed because it worked. The first language of the browser was Java. People mm-hmm. don't like to remember that. Java applets were a huge flat-on-your-face failure.
That's
the
right.
Biggest failure in the history of software development. So simply being the language of the browser is not sufficient to guarantee that you're going to be a successful language. So there certainly was a lot of luck and fortune in what JavaScript did, but I think there's a lot more to it than that.
And I think one of the things it did was enable, you know, that core set of features and the flexibility of that core set of features enabled a set of libraries to be built on top of it to abstract away and to provide sort of, you know, nice surface areas. And so we saw, you know, things like jQuery and things like YUI and a bunch of libraries come out that really were able to tailor the experience of using JavaScript and using the whole web stack in a really interesting way. And that the flexibility of the language was really critical to how those libraries were able to expose what they do. And so I think there are some reasons in the language itself that did sort of promote the success. But I agree, you know, it's a sort of, you're locked in. If you want to build for the standards web, you know, you've really got one choice at the end of the day, and so that's not nothing.
That's true. That's an important part. But I really do like JS++ or JS-, however you look at it. I mean, one could argue or ask, you know, clearly the language needs to evolve to meet what we have established as going to be the reality going forward. I mean, you look at the keynote today, we're talking about native HTML5. Well, you're programming in JavaScript if you're going to be, you know, programming. So talk to me a little about that. Like, what do you guys think about in terms of, and you mentioned it earlier, how the language may need to evolve to meet new needs, or are you saying it just needs, we just need to have a subtraction, not an addition?
A subtraction, I think, would be hugely beneficial. But we're also looking at things to make the language more expressive, to make it easier, to make it more resilient, more reliable.
Okay. So I'm just looking over here because this is really about people out there. Stevie TXXX, why can't we consolidate and have all the functions of JavaScript in modern languages like C#, for example? Luke, come on, man.
Yeah. So like I said, I used to work on C# for a few years a while back. So I think there's two ways to interpret that question. One would be, you know, why can't we use C# as the language for working with the DOM and with all of the web APIs and basically bring C# into the browser? Mm. And I think there are projects which do this, which take C#, compile it down to JavaScript, and then allow you to, you know, use C# effectively as your programming language. There's a lot of folks using those kind of tools, so they're definitely effective. And I think for folks who come from a C# background, there's a lot of reasons to like that. They do have some inherent kind of trade-offs that you're making because they're not as sort of, there's sort of an impedance mismatch between C# and the base class libraries of .NET and all of that, everything it brings along, and JavaScript and the web platform. And so that impedance mismatch kind of tends to sort of make it feel a bit unnatural. But you know, if you're a C# developer and you want to target this platform, those kind of things are a tool you can use. I think in the other direction, in a sense, C# has been bringing features from JavaScript. It brought lambdas, and then it brought dynamic, and you know, it is some of the features are going that direction. But I think probably the more interesting question is, you know, languages targeting JavaScript as a compiler target.
Absolutely.
And I'd also just throw in there briefly that it's not necessarily the case that we always want all languages to sort of converge towards this superset of all language features. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that's nice about, from a certain perspective, language purity is that you can say, well, for this project, maybe I do care about static typing and things like that. So I'm going to go with this language. For this language, I want ease of writing or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we want to be careful when we say, well, you know, why can't we bring this feature into language X from language Y? Because it may be that there are certain reasons that the language was designed in a certain way.
Absolutely. Now we have a question from good old Al, man. This is your first question today, at least since I can remember. What do you think about a bytecode for the web instead of compiling to JavaScript, I mean?
So JavaScript was designed to be a load and go language where it's delivered to the execution site as source code and compiled and executed immediately. So there is not a standard for bytecode, although most of the interpreters will provide some. That surprisingly has a nice performance benefit and a security benefit in that if you look at Java, which provides one of the most popular bytecode formats, one of the things that killed it in the browser was that it took so long to load and validate the bytecode before executing it that it turns out you can compile the stuff faster than you can test the validity of the bytecode. And so there are a large class of errors that and security mishaps that are avoided because we trust the compiler to properly vet the code.
Another brief thing to note, too, is that a lot of times it's actually easier to perform the security analyses on ASTs, abstract syntax trees, instead of the bytecode themselves. And one of the reasons that the compiler process can often be shorter is because you can actually capture some of those semantic relationships in the AST and then do your security analysis atop that. Whereas if you just give the security analyzer bytecode, it has to induce essentially the AST and then try to do some of those flow analyses, and that takes time.
Right. So there has been some discussion about having a standard AST format for JavaScript and allow for browsers to consume that, but so far there's not been much progress on that.
So we have, Moldy Sea Swimmer, that's kind of a nice name, huh? Will we ever see browser support language other than JavaScript? We already sort of talked about that. We used to support something called VBScript, remember that?
Yes, still do, I believe.
Okay. But it's sort of clear that JavaScript is the language of the web, right?
Yeah, so Mozilla, as an experiment, allows for Python in Firefox. But they wisely do not expose it to the web. Because we've spent 15 years trying to find all the security problems in the JavaScript sandbox. And nobody wants to start over with another language.
Sure.
So that's the major impediment to going forward with other languages. So JavaScript has security problems, but because it's been tested in the field for so long, it's actually better than all the other languages that are available.
Interesting. Well, I mean, clear seems to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not a whole lot of traction right now for any, you know, there's no standards body looking at another language, and so, you know, right now individual vendors could go and try to do something like that, but there's no cohesive effort being made right now on that front. I don't think that means that long term there won't necessarily be efforts in that direction, and there may be good reasons to do that, but we haven't seen that effort happening yet.
Yeah, I hope that there will. That JavaScript should not be the last programming language.
No.
There ought to be a replacement for it.
Agreed. I mean, I think it's actually, it's nice to see it when it's used as an intermediate language or as a compiler target. And it will just run in the virtual machine that is the browser. And you can, you know, in some sense, if you like classes, use classes at a higher level abstraction, it'll end up at machine code for the web, which could be JavaScript. Now, there's a question from Who is Null, which is an interesting name because it's an object. How about jscript.net? Well, Luke, I don't know what to say, man.
Sure. So JScript.net was interesting because it's sort of the opposite of what we were talking about languages compiling down to JavaScript. It's compiling JavaScript to run on a different VM, not on the VMs that are sort of in the web browsers. And so, you know, JScript.net was developed early on in the development of .NET, primarily around the thought that folks would want to use JavaScript, because there was a lot of folks who knew JavaScript, they would want to use it to script .NET applications. And so they would want to use it outside of the browser for other sorts of things, either on the server, for scripting .NET client applications, that sort of thing. And we ultimately didn't see as much use of JScript.net for those kind of purposes. JavaScript was really remained mostly just popular in the browser at that stage. And so there hasn't been a whole lot of work on JScript.net recently, obviously. And I think, you know, if there become scenarios where there's a need, who knows, we could see JScript.net make a comeback.
Excellent. And as we're winding down here, it's really interesting to see there's a question by someone who about leaving the browser. And in fact, with things like Node.js, it clearly is.
Oh, it has. So JavaScript's going back to the server now. JavaScript has been embedded into applications. It's in operating systems where you can do desktop widgets with it. It's in the best databases now, like in MongoDB and CouchDB. So it's left. It's everywhere now. It's still strong in the browser. The browser is the world's biggest application delivery system, so that's a place it doesn't want to leave.
Sure.
But it's gotten into all sorts of other places as well.
Excellent. Well, hey, do we have time for another question? I don't think we do. I think we're going to wind this down. But I want everyone out there to know who's watching. Doug's going to stay right here, and we're going to continue to geek out, ask some specific questions. You all know Doug's, you know, pushing language forward, creator of JSON, lots of other great things. So ask questions, and thank you guys for joining on the panel. Yeah.